So we are now beginning the second pasuk. Remember, we said there are four pasukim in the Arami Ovid Avi section. The first pasuk describes the descent to Mitzrayim. The second pasuk describes the shiabud. The third pasuk describes the tefillah, but it's akal Hashem. The fourth pasuk describes the geula. So we discuss the first pasuk, how Yaakov descended to Mitzrayim. What were his plans? Did the plans come true? Was he isolated or was he culturally assimilated? The miraculous meteoric rise in population, the fact that they were very vulnerable, they had to give birth in the fields, according to the Medrash. So now we're discussing the second pasuk. The second pasuk in this four pasuk section is about the shibud. So today we'll discuss the first phrase of that second pasuk. The first phrase of that second pasuk is a very interesting phrase. Vayareu osanu hamitzrim. The Egyptians performed evil acts to us. Vayareu osanu hamitzrim. But the phrase osanu was a little bit strange. Why does the Torah use the word vayareu osanu hamitzrim? The Torah should write vayareu lanu. They did evil things to us, lanu. Osanu means vayareu osanu, us. Lanu, we're the victims. And when we receive something, we're the victims. And we received all their persecution and their discrimination. So there are essentially three ideas which are expressed in Chazal. I don't even know where I wrote it down. Let me see if I made some notes. I can't find my notes now. I'll just describe it. Okay, here. Number one is that the phrase Vayareu Osanu suggests a gradual process. And the matter says that they didn't immediately enslave us. But they started to tax us, and they started to draft us for public projects, for construction projects. And slowly but surely, all these laws against the Jews turned into slavery and bondage and murder and genocide and all-out assault. And remember, everything in Jewish history is cyclical. So what happened in Mitzrayim is going to repeat itself throughout Jewish history. And very often, horrible anti-Semitism and horrible persecution begins in very, very seemingly innocent legislation and innocent. Of course, we found this most odiously during the Holocaust, where it began with Nuremberg laws, which were meant just to limit Jewish entry into society, limit Jewish finances, limit Jewish participation in universities, and slowly but surely it morphed, which means that you have to be able to nip anti-Semitism in the bud, because sometimes you feel that the initial stages, well, they're not that bad, we can live with it, these are just laws, these are just limitations and inconveniences, but you have to be able to see these things coming on the horizon. And sometimes anti-Semitism just erupts with this violent hostility all at once. But sometimes it starts in slow stages, and it starts with legislation, and then it becomes murder, then it becomes violence. So you have to be careful, especially in today's environment. People say it's not such a bad thing, freedom of speech, it's just conversation, it's happening on the universities, we can live with it, we can tolerate it, it's just certain factions of the government. But slowly but surely, it worms its way and explodes into something much more violent. So Vayareu Osanu captures this gradual development of the plan of murder. The second issue, which is fascinating, that many of the Mefarshim point to is the Medrash, where Paro started reckoning and saying, well, I'm part of a long lineage of people that try to defeat these Jewish people, and I have to try to find a way to succeed where people before me failed, in particular Esav. Paro was saying, Esav waited until Yaakov died, and he was going to kill him when Yaakov died, and Esav waited until Yitzchak died, and that's when he wanted to hatch his plan of genocide. But in between the time that Esav wanted to kill Yaakov and the time that he actually challenged Yaakov, Parshas Vayishlach, all of a sudden Yaakov had 11 children, and then it was too late already, because even if he killed Yaakov, so Paro said, I have to nip it in the bud. For me to nip it in the bud, I have to kill the children. So Paro tried to magnify or exacerbate the genocide that Esav had planned by trying to think, where did my predecessor fail, and now I'm going to succeed. And then it continues. Haman said, wait a second, Paro only made a decree against the males, but the females could still have children. So Haman said, L'hashmid l'haru galabit is kol ha'yudim minav yazakin tafin hashin. And Vayareu Osanu captures the fact that Paro was trying to double down on something that had happened before, that Esav failed, and now Paro is thinking to himself, how can I succeed where Esav failed? Now, that's fascinating, because I know why Esav is so angry at Yaakov, because Esav feels like he was supposed to be the child of destiny. He was supposed to be the Bechor. In his mind, Yaakov was a thief. Yaakov was a colonialist. Yaakov took something that he didn't deserve. So he's constantly, constantly looking to reclaim his lost glory, to reclaim his lost title. And Haman sees himself as part of the lineage of Esav, because Haman comes from Magog, which comes from Amalek, which is a grandson of Esav. So I understand why Haman would look back to Esav and say, well, my great-great-great-great-grandfather failed in this regard. How can I be more successful? But where does Paro get into this lineage? Paro's an Egyptian. What do we do with the Egyptians? What does Paro start thinking, well, I have to succeed where Esav before me failed? And evidently, there's something in anti-Semitism, even subconsciously, subliminally, in which it's not just about people. Because if you just read Parsha Shmos, it's political. Paro has this foreign nation embedded in his country, in his society. He's afraid there'll be a fifth column. He needs cheap labor. You don't really feel that Paro and this persecution of the Jewish people is part of the overall story of Jewish selection, and he's battling against Jewish selection, he's battling against us as in people of Hashem. Paro doesn't even know who Hashem is. When Moshe comes and presents himself in the beginning of Shemos, Paro says, "Mi Hashem Hashemah b'kolo." And yet, somehow, maybe Paro thought this medrash that I have to succeed where Esav failed, or maybe he didn't think it consciously, but the medrash is telling us what Paro thought subconsciously. But Paro clearly sees his battle against the Jews as part of this intergenerational, never-ending story of trying to defeat the Jewish people who are the children of Hashem. And Esav was bristling at that. Why should you be the children of Hashem? I want to be the children of Hashem. Haman was bristling at that. And Paro, who seems to be not part of Edom, Esav, Amalek, Paro sees himself as part of this lineage, as part of this tradition of trying to defeat Jewish selection. And it reminds us that even though if you interviewed your average anti-Semite in the University of Johannesburg, you interviewed him, they wouldn't be able to quote Sefer Bereishis, they wouldn't be able to quote Jewish selection, the children of God, but there's something subliminally in human consciousness, in public consciousness, that bristles at the fact that there's a chosen people and wants to eliminate that chosen people from the face of this earth. Even though they would impute it to cultural narratives and political issues and economic issues and Jews control this and Jews control that, something very deep. If you interviewed Paro, Paro would probably say, you know what, I just need cheap labor and I want to persecute this foreign people who I hate. But deep down, he saw himself as part of the Esav battle against Jewish selection. So that's the second idea that Chazal convey by this very strange phrase, not Vayareu Lanu, but Vayareu Osanu. The third phrase, or the third aspect, which is probably the most literal, because when the Haggadah tells us what does Vayareu Osanu HaMitzrim mean, it quotes a pasuk to explain the phrase Vayareu Osanu in Parshas Kisavo, it quotes a pasuk in Shmos. It's an often overlooked pasuk because you read by it so quickly. What does the pasuk say? Hava nischak malo. Let's be a little bit smart, Paro is saying. Pen your bet, because this people will overpopulate. V'haya ki sikrenu milchama, when we fight our enemies, v'nosaf gam hu'al soneinu, there'll be a foreign mole, they'll join our enemies inside mole. V'nil chambanu, they'll defeat us, they'll sabotage us. V'ala min haaretz, and we'll have to leave Mitzrayim. There are two things happening in this pasuk. The most important thing that's happening in the pasuk is we are being cast and stereotyped. We're being portrayed as a fifth column. We weren't the fifth column. We were faithful to the Egypt. We saved Egypt from famine. Yosef has skyrocketed Egypt to international success. We're loyal citizens. We're always loyal citizens. We support the local government. We're on behalf of law and order, not on behalf of chaos. However, listen carefully, because this is a simple pshat of Vayareu Osanu. In order to murder a people, you have to create a propaganda machine. The propaganda machine has to cast that people that you want to murder as subhuman, as dangerous, as enemies. Throughout history, whenever there was rabid anti-Semitism, there's always a cover story. Because in order to sell, most people are good at heart. Most people, Hashem made everyone would sell in the Elohim. Most people are kind and compassionate. In order to convert kind and compassionate people to murderers, you have to portray the victim of your hateful violence. You have to portray them through a propaganda machine as something that deserves to die. And the cover story for anti-Semitism always changes. For example, before the world was monotheistic, why did people hate us and why did people want to kill us? Because we were monotheists. And we challenged them out of their easygoing lifestyle, sexual promiscuity, an easygoing lifestyle of paganism. And then the world turned monotheistic. And the propaganda had to shift, because now the world was Christian and the world was Islamic, so we couldn't be hated for being monotheists. So we had to be hated because this whole story that developed in the early part of the previous millennia in England, Africa, the first blood libel, that we killed Jesus, and we drink blood of young children this period of time in our matzah, and all these crazy, crazy, silly stories. And then what happened in the 19th and 20th century? organized religion began to collapse, and you can no longer sell anti-Semitism based on the fact that Jews killed Jesus, because, like, who cares about religion anymore? So in the post-Darwinian world, in which nature was portrayed as a system of self-selection, that there's higher races and lower races, stronger animals and weaker animals, and for the system to survive, the weaker animals have to be eliminated, they have to be prey for the predators. So social Darwinism means let's take those Darwinist ideals from the system of nature and implant them into society. Just like nature can only survive if the weaker races are eliminated, similarly, society can only survive if the weaker races. It's called social Darwinism. And that's how Hitler, Yimach Shemo, Hitler quoted social Darwinism in his book called Mein Kampf. So the Jews were portrayed as the weaker race, the sub-Aryan race. They have to be eliminated, have to be blood. Blood has to be led, has to be shed in order for society to survive. But it wasn't just Hitler. This was a very, very popular ideal. It was just weaponized by Hitler against the Jews. There were people in America who were writing books about social Darwinism, about eliminating the weaker class. It was mass euthanasia. You know what euthanasia is? Where weaker classes, where mentally and handicapped people were killed in order to cleanse society. And of course today, in the post-World War II world of politically correct and of equality, and everyone shares the same DNA, it's no longer PC to talk about a sub-race, because everyone is the same race, multiculturalism. So now we have to revive the colonialist narrative to say the reason we hate Jews is because they're colonialists and they're stealing land. Namely, in order to kill people and in order to kill Jews, there has to be a propaganda behind the murder scheme. And in Mitzrayim, the propaganda, this is the first appearance, was these are foreign moles, foreign spies, foreign saboteurs. They're going to come into our people. They're going to join our enemies. Hava nischak mala. We have to find a way to overcome this. Pen yerbe, v'yaki tekenem l'chama, v'nosaf gam u'also neinu. So, and that's the literal meaning of v'yarei osanu. What does v'yarei osanu mean? Not they did evil things to us. That would be v'yarei lanu. They cast us as evil. V'yarei osanu. They described us as toxic. Us, not to us. Lana would be to us. Asana would be of us. They cast us and pitched us as toxic dangers to society. And this is the first appearance of propaganda behind genocide. So these are the three ideas which Chazal developed. I'll talk about a fourth aspect tomorrow, but I want this year to be too lengthy. Chazal speak about Vayirei Osanu. There was gradual. First it was legislation, taxes, real estate taxes. What do you mean? You don't want to pay taxes? You're a member of society. Pull your own weight. What do you mean? You don't want to join the public works? We're building pyramids. And slowly but surely, these legislative actions against the Jews turn into violence and murder and slavery. Number two is that Paro was always reckoning. Vayirei Osanu, I've got to go one step further than Esav. What does Paro think about Esav? What does Paro have to do with Esav? Paro's in Egypt. Esav's in Edom. But yet, subliminally maybe, anti-Semitism is being driven by this battle to defeat our status as the children of Hashem, because people feel challenged by our presence in this world. Number three, which is the simple shot, which many Rishonim take, not v'yarei lanu, v'yarei osanu, they cast us as dangerous to society, and that justified in their minds, and that was the way they sold genocide to the broader public. Okay? Have a great week, everyone. We need everyone on hand this week for the Quiet Face Matters. See you all tomorrow.
Thank you so much, Rabbi. You're welcome. Good day.